Tonight, be reading Samyutta 22, number 89, Kaimaka. And it's one of the few, if not the only one, really, that I was able to find in the canon that goes into some description of the conceit, I am, one of the last five fetters to enlightenment. It's a beautiful sutta. So, we shall begin. On one occasion, a number of elder bhikkhus were dwelling at Kosambi in Gosita's park. Now on that occasion, the Venerable Kaimaka was living at Jujub Tree Park, sick, afflicted, gravely ill. Then in the evening, those elder bhikkhus emerged from seclusion and addressed the Venerable Dasaka thus, "Come, friend Dasaka, approach the bhikkhu Kaimaka and say to him, 'The elders say to you, friend Kaimaka, we hope that you are bearing up, friend. We hope that you are getting better. We hope that your painful feelings are subsiding and not increasing, and that their subsiding, not their increase, is to be discerned.' 'Yes, friends,' the Venerable Dasaka replied. And he approached the Venerable Kaimaka and delivered his message. The Venerable Kaimaka answered, 'I am not bearing up, friend. I am not getting better. Strong, painful feelings are increasing in me, not subsiding, and their increase, not their subsiding, is to be discerned.' Then the Venerable Dasaka approached the elder bhikkhus and reported what the Venerable Kaimaka had said. They told him, 'Come, friend Dasaka, approach the bhikkhu Kaimaka and say to him, "The elders say to you, friend Kaimaka, these five aggregates subject to clinging, friend, have been spoken of by the Blessed One. That is, the form aggregate subject to clinging, the feeling aggregate subject to clinging, the perception aggregate subject to clinging, the volitional formations aggregate subject to clinging, the consciousness aggregate subject to clinging. Does the Venerable Kaimaka regard anything as self or as belonging to self among these five aggregates subject to clinging?' 'Yes, friends,' the Venerable Dasaka replied. And he approached the Venerable Kaimaka and delivered his message. The Venerable Kaimaka replied, 'These five aggregates, subject to clinging, have been spoken of by the Blessed One, that is, the form aggregate subject to clinging, and on through to the consciousness aggregate subject to clinging. Among these five aggregates subject to clinging, I do not regard anything as self or as belonging to self.' Then the Venerable Dasaka approached the elder bhikkhus and reported what the Venerable Kaimaka had said. They replied, 'Come, friend Dasaka, approach the bhikkhu Kaimaka and say to him, "The elders say to you, friend Kaimaka, these five aggregates subject to clinging, friend, have been spoken of by the Blessed One. That is, the form aggregate subject to clinging, onto the consciousness aggregate subject to clinging. If the Venerable Kaimaka does not regard anything among these five aggregates subject to clinging as self or as belonging to self, then he is an arahant, one whose taints are destroyed.' 'Yes, friends,' the Venerable Dasaka replied, and he approached the Venerable Kaimaka and delivered this message. The Venerable Kaimaka replied, 'These five aggregates subject to clinging have been spoken of by the Blessed One, that is, the form aggregate subject to clinging, the consciousness aggregate subject to clinging. I do not regard anything among these five aggregates subject to clinging as self or as belonging to self. Yet I am not an arahant, one whose taints are destroyed. Friends, the notion, I am, has not yet vanished in me in relation to these five aggregates subject to clinging. But I do not regard any among them as this I am.'" I'm going to read the footnote on that. This is Bhikkhu Bodhi's words. This passage clarifies the essential difference between the Seka and the Arahant. Seka, trainee. While the Seka, not trainee who's stream enterer or above, but not an Arahant. While the Seka has eliminated identity view and thus no longer identifies any of the five aggregates as a self, he has not yet eradicated ignorance, which sustains a residual conceit and desire, I am, in relation to the five aggregates. The Arhant, in contrast, has eradicated ignorance, the root of all misconceptions, and thus no longer entertains any ideas of I and mine. The other elders apparently had not yet attained any stage of awakening, and thus did not understand this difference. But the Venerable Kamaka must have at least been a stream enterer. Some of the commentators hold he was a non-returner, others a once-returner. And thus knew that the elimination of identity view does not completely remove the sense of personal identity. Even for the non-returner, an odor of subjectivity, in quotes, based on the five aggregates, still lingers over his experience. So continuing, then the Venerable Dasaka approached the elder bhikkhus and reported what the Venerable Kamaka had said. They replied, "Come, friend Dasaka, approach the bhikkhu Kamaka and say to him, 'The elders say to you, friend Kamaka, when you speak of this, quote, I am, what is it that you speak of as I am? Do you speak of form as I am, or do you speak of I am apart from form? Do you speak of feeling as I am, or do you speak of I am apart from feeling, of perception, of volitional formations, of consciousness as I am, or do you speak of I am apart from consciousness? When you speak of this I am, friend Kamaka, what is it that you speak of as I am?" "Yes, friends," Venerable Dasaka replied, and he approached Venerable Kamaka and delivered this message. "Enough, friend Dasaka. Why keep running back and forth? Bring me my staff, friend. I'll go to the elder bhikkhus myself." Then the Venerable Kamaka, leaning on his staff, approached the elder bhikkhus, exchanged greetings with them, and sat down to one side. The elder bhikkhus then said to him, "Friend Kamaka, when you speak of this I am, what is it you speak of as I am?" "Friends, I do not speak of form as I am, nor do I speak of I am apart from form. I do not speak of feeling as I am, nor of perceptions as I am, nor of volitional formations as I am, nor of consciousness as I am, nor do I speak of I am apart from consciousness. Friends, although the notion I am has not yet vanished in me in relation to these five aggregates subject to clinging, still I do not regard anything among them as this I am. Suppose, friends, there is the scent of a blue, red, or white lotus. Would one be speaking rightly if one would say, 'The scent belongs to the petals,' or 'The scent belongs to the stalk,' or 'The scent belongs to the pistils?" "No, friend." "And how, friends, should one answer if one is to answer rightly?" "Answering rightly, friend, one should answer, 'The scent belongs to the flower.'" "So too, friends, I do not speak of form as I am, nor do I speak of I am apart from form. I do not speak of feeling as I am, nor of perception as I am, nor of volitional formations as I am, nor of consciousness as I am, nor do I speak of I am apart from consciousness. Friends, although the notion I am has not yet vanished in me in relation to these five aggregates subject to clinging, still I do not regard anything among them as this I am." Friends, even though a noble disciple has abandoned the five lower fetters, still, in relation to the five aggregates subject to clinging, there lingers in him a residual conceit, I am, a desire, I am, an underlying tendency, I am, that has not yet been uprooted. Sometime later, he dwells contemplating rise and fall in the five aggregates subject to clinging, such as form, such as origin, such as passing away, such as feeling, such as perception, such are volitional formations, such as consciousness, such its origin, such its passing away. As he dwells thus contemplating rise and fall in the five aggregates subject to clinging, the residual conceit, I am, desire, I am, the underlying tendency, I am, that had not yet been uprooted, this comes to be uprooted. So just a comment there, just... as noted before, that's the same contemplation on impermanence and not-self, non-satisfactoriness that leads to the uprooting of I am as well as the previous understanding of not-self. Suppose, friends, a cloth has become soiled and stained, and its owners give it to a laundryman. The laundryman would scour it evenly with cleaning salt, lye, or cow dung, and rinse it in clean water. Even though that cloth would become pure and clean, it would still retain a residual smell of cleaning salt, lye, or cow dung that had not yet vanished. The laundryman would then give it back to the owners. The owners would put it in a sweet-scented casket, and the residual smell of cleaning salt, lye, or cow dung that had not yet vanished would vanish. I'll read the commentaries, a little analysis of that. That's not too bad, really. The worldling's mental process is like the soiled cloth. The three contemplations of impermanence, suffering, and not-self are like the three cleansers. The mental process of the returner is like the cloth that has been washed with the three cleansers. The defilements to be eradicated by the path of arahantship are like the residual smell of the cleansers. The knowledge of the path of arahantship is like the sweetly scented casket, and the destruction of all defilements by that path is like the vanishing of the residual smell of the cleansers from the cloth after it has been placed in the casket. So too, friends, even though a noble disciple has abandoned the five lower fetters, still in relation to the five aggregates subject to clinging, there lingers in him a residual conceit, I am, a desire, I am, an underlying tendency, I am, that has not yet been uprooted. As he dwells thus contemplating rise and fall in the five aggregates subject to clinging, the residual conceit, I am, the desire, I am, the underlying tendency, I am, that had not yet been uprooted. This comes to be uprooted. When this was said, the elder bhikkhus said to the Venerable Kamaka, "We did not ask our questions in order to trouble the Venerable Kamaka, but we thought that the Venerable Kamaka would be capable of explaining, teaching, proclaiming, establishing, disclosing, analyzing, and elucidating the Blessed One's teaching in detail." And the Venerable Kamaka has explained, taught, proclaimed, established, disclosed, analyzed, and elucidated the Blessed One's teaching in detail. This is what the Venerable Kamaka said. Elated, the elder bhikkhus delighted in the Venerable Kamaka's statement. And while this discourse was being spoken, the mind of 60 elder bhikkhus and of the Venerable Kamaka were liberated from the taints by non-clinging. So this is one example of a person, monk, actually realizing his full liberation while he's teaching Dhamma. Can't think of anything to comment. If people have any thoughts or questions about that?
Any other, I don't recall another sutta with so many enlightenments other than those given by the Buddha.
That's a good question. 60, I think.
Sorry, Buddha. Usually that pops up and then the fire sermon.
Another one, but sorry, Buddha or something, just very recently. It was 60 or something.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. It's really also, spent a bit of time searching through Access to Insight and looking at different places, and in this kind of detail, there's really not, any other mention of it in the canon. I mean, there's bits and pieces, and certainly, plenty of references to it, to the conceit I am, as a like an underlying tendency, anusaya, or a fetter, sanyojana. And used in other kinds of contexts, but usually just as a reference to them in that particular category. in this sense. So this is really where it's, I found anyway, that it's kind of spelled out the difference between it and the elimination of Sakaya Ditti personality view, which is one of the first three fetters that's understood upon stream entry, or eliminated upon stream entry.
I have a question about this notion of I am, which may or may not sort of clutter up the fetters. It's something that I might have been circling around with, but it has to do with seeing that there's a form or feeling or consciousness or whatever is the possession of a self or the emanation of a self, and therefore sort of assuming a self that has to have this as its possession, but at the same time being able to see that, that the self is not the body, the self is not the feelings, that they're just sort of like a flower in the metaphor, that there's a self that's somehow like the odor that belongs to the flower, but it can't actually be found in any single one of the khandhas. So the question is, when you compare that experience or ordinary experience of self to what's being spoken of in the sutta, and they're going to kind of come across the same sort of thing in other places in Canada, what's the distinction between someone who's broken some fetters and someone who hasn't?
Well, I'm not quite sure I understand the question.
So what Kamika is saying in the sutta is that, you know, there's this experience of I am, and there are these fetters, and I don't identify the I am with anyone, if not fetters.
Khandhas, yeah.
And I don't identify this self, this experience of I am, with any one of those fetters.
Right.
When he uses the metaphor of flower in the scent. And so, properly speaking, to what does the scent belong? The flower. The flower being a combination of the five khandhas.
Right.
And so, I think many people would say, well, yeah, I'm not the body, I'm not the feelings. But the whole combination of experiences, that's me.
Oh, I see, as a combination, a sum total of them. Yeah, I think that was a question from the other night as well.
So what's the distinction between those two?
Well, I guess the way I see, you know, it's not like they're saying that, you know, he's saying that the scent of the flower is actually the self, you know, or the I am. It's a manifestation of ignorance in a way that it's like it's an appearance or an experience. And maybe if you were, you know, people correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, if you were to try and put it into the category, say, of a khanda, it's a perception. So that it's, that's how I understand it anyway, is that, you know, even the conceit I am is still just another dependently origin, you know, arisen khanda, you know, khanda perception that has, you know, all the same characteristics of any of the other khandhas of, you know, unsatisfactoriness, impermanence, and not self. So even the perception not self is not self. So I see it as like kind of an emanation or a, you know, an experience that's for sure a quote-unquote, you know, real experience as much as anything is real within the realm of conditions. But it has all the same characteristics. It's, you know, it's not like it's that there is that you can't point to any kind of unchanging, everlasting, satisfactory self, you know, as the sum total of the five khandhas, any more than you can as separate relationship to any of the separate khandhas.
So maybe just make sure I understand what you're saying. Something like a person who's experiencing this I am residue after having broken some of the lower fetters recognizes it merely as it's a residue, but it's not natural. sort of self-existent reality. Whereas someone who hasn't broken the fetters, maybe you can sort of see from moment to moment intellectually or otherwise
right.
that the body is not self. But and the perception of there's a self here is so deeply rooted that it's not sort of really seriously questioned. And therefore they're still presuming an existing self.
Mm-hmm.
That's behind the
that sounds yeah. sounds yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then also the difference would be between somebody who has eradicated that identity view, but some of you still has that residue of I am. Is that kind of like the basis of experience? There's still that subjective experience.
Subjective objective means that?
Yeah, rather than seeing things as
purely
arising, passing away. There's a subjective feeling of me and the experience.
Yeah. Even though they know that you know, the form is not the self, the feeling is not the self, that kind of stuff, they're still operating within that. Yeah. Just one brief other part of a sutta. Because you see, I was checking with Lung Pa to see if he recognized anywhere in the suttas where it's actually discussed what we've heard of as you know the nine kinds of conceit that start with the three kinds of conceit, the three kinds of conceit of I am superior, I am equal, I am inferior. The nine kinds of conceit being when someone is superior, having those three, either of those three views, when someone is equal, having any of those three views, or when someone is actually inferior, having any one of those three views, making it nine views. But as a list of nine, just couldn't find them in the canon. I couldn't even find any reference to it in the Visuddhimagga. But I guess you found in that Thai compendium, a reference to the Abhidhamma maybe is where the nine are listed.
Both in the Abhidhamma as well as in the Kutaka Nidesa.
Oh, the Nidesa, that's right. Is where the...
Which is... Kind of post-canonical.
Part of the Kutaka.
But
you'll see references to those three kinds of conceit in bits and pieces through the canon, like in this particular one here, which is in the Kanda Sanyutta also, number 49, Sona. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Rajagaha in the bamboo grove, the squirrel sanctuary. Then Sona, the householder's son, approached the Blessed One. The Blessed One then said to Sona, the householder's son, Sona, when any ascetics or and Brahmins, on the basis of form, which is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change, regard themselves thus, I am superior, or I am equal, or I am inferior, what is that due to apart from not seeing things as they really are? When any ascetics and Brahmins, on the basis of feeling, on the basis of perception, on the basis of volitional formations, on the basis of consciousness, which is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change, regard themselves as I am superior, or I am equal, or I am inferior, what does that do to, apart from not seeing things as they really are? Sona, when any ascetics and Brahmins do not, on the basis of form, which is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change, regard themselves as I am superior, I am equal, or I am inferior, what does that do to, apart from seeing things as they really are? When any ascetics and Brahmins do not, on the basis of feeling, perception, volition formations, consciousness, regard themselves thus, I am superior, or I am equal, or I am inferior, what does that do to, apart from seeing things as they really are? So he's just introducing, and then goes through the rest of the suttas, the traditional instructions around, like the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. But he's just pointing out this kind of one manifestation of conceit, I am, whereas one is holding oneself or one's aggregates in comparison to others and making a judgment about it being superior, equal, or the experience being superior, equal, or inferior as a way of just differentiating self even further. And so you see that in a number of the suttas, and it's a good way of realizing how we compare ourselves and put ourselves in relation to others in that way. I don't think it's not as quite as subtle references to the reference to the conceit I am that's Sanyojana fetter in the way that it was pointed out in the Kamaka Sutta, but it seems like another manifestation of that same conceit.
And then is that also confirming when the Buddha says does not disparage others, nor lose mod on himself? That simple line that he says in regard to when the bhikkhu's behavior or something says does not mean, and over this he does not disparage others, or he says mod on himself or something like that. And it just sounds very similar to that, but that's like that to realize that, like when Burwan said, like that's actually kind of a high thing.
Yeah, it does seem to me like it's kind of part of that same comparison of one to others. Don't hold yourself in, no matter whether you are superior or inferior or equal, you just don't need to compare yourself to others.
I have to try to find it, but I think that nine types of conceit comes up in the middle of the sutta in the Majjhima. Some sort of really long exposition attributed to Sariputta.
Yeah, if you can find it, I'd be interested. I did lots of searching.
This is slightly different, but does volition differ from intention?
I think they're pretty much used synonymously. At least I use them synonymously, volition and intention. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of translation.
Chaitanya.
Yeah, it's good to sort of go back to the Pali sense of Chaitanya, because intention doesn't quite, especially in how it's used in English language, it doesn't really quite convey, even though it's an ordinary translation, it doesn't quite convey what Jaden means. It's like when does something, why do you have the intention? But it's also because what it is that Jaden is also that volition is a good, it is a pretty good word because it's going to movement of mind towards something.
Would you say like it's a combination of what we would call intention with that movement towards? Is that
yes, with riders. in a sense there's a because sometimes there's that word intention means as if you have it really clearly formulated in your mind exactly what you would like the result of your action to be. But that's not volition. It's like some movement of mind towards something, which you might not have a very clear idea of what the result will be. But it's still volition, and it's still karmic, has karmic potential for results. So it doesn't have to be that clearly formulated in mind for it to be volitional act.
So if I were to say, like, for myself, that moving towards, that's the volition, is that close enough?
Yeah.
In the vinaya, when we talk about intention,
effort and result.
Yes, Jaitan, another word that I use.
Jaitan is the word, yeah. And it sounds like your point is that, like, it's not necessarily like a conscious, thought out.
Right.
Deliberate.
Fully formulated.
Yeah.
Deliberate act. It's not as ironclad as that, or as specific as that.
Mm-hmm. And also, as you were saying, we get it mixed up because we use the word intention sometimes to mean like motivation.
Right.
You can, like in the Vinaya, we've talked about that. Sometimes it's like the intention, as Ajahn Jeff describes it in the way it's used in the Vinaya mostly, is like the intention to perform an action, like the intention to kill. It's like the intention to perform that act is the intention. Whereas the motivation might be something like out of compassion or out of anger. There's many different motivations that one has that are behind the intention, but the intention, at least in the Vinaya, is to actually, it's that movement towards expression.
What's that with sankhara translated sometimes as volitional formations? What's the difference between the nuance between the two words, jhikkhana and sankhara?
Well, the thing is the defining feature of sankhara is jhikkhana.
It's interesting, I was thinking about that, and I actually was after one of Tom Pesla's questions the other night, and how much I can find that a sense of self revolves around that one particular mental factor of chaitanya, intention. You know, there's this sense of, you know, you have a certain perception or a certain experience, and you know, based on just past habitual tendencies in the mind, there's a rising up to react in a certain way.
Yeah.
You know, either, you know, to yell or whatever it is, if it's anger. But there's that sense of rising up to respond, and that I think is chaitanya. You know, it's that mental factor of movement, of, you know, to respond, usually out of totally confused habitual ways of doing it. And it's so interesting how, you know, I, you know, can see myself you know, really holding a sense of self around that particular mental factor, you know.
Yeah, I have to say it really is helpful, because when I think about it in terms of, let's say, like Vijasampada, more as just like a step in an ongoing process, It makes a lot more sense the way you describe it, because when I think about, like, I want some cocoa, I'm like, I'm going to tell this person what's going on. Like, yeah, it's not like internally I sit down at the desk, you know what I mean, and plot it all out. So, it's a good thing.
Can I ask you a question about that? In the text, so it talks about seeing and working with sankhara, but does it talk about seeing and working with chaitanya? Or is that more of just, are you able to see that in action?
usually jhetana when jhetana is talked about, it's usually talked about integral functioning as part of karma. So that and actually there's discourses where the Buddha actually uses the same formulation of the Four Noble Truths, but with there's karma, the cause of karma, cessation of karma, the path leading to cessation of karma. So that there's highlighting karma, and then where the Buddha, the definition that the Buddha uses, that karma is volition. It's just this, these are surroundings. So that's, again, that's the structure of working. with the with that aspect of how we create actions and results of action.
So it's like trying to the task is establishing wholesome intentions, because that's the precursor to the actual action.
Mm-hmm.
In body, speech, and mind, that mm-hmm. that will result in karmic.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, so could we say that in terms of like developing the skillful stuff, that conscious intention could very well precede volition?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, developing, say, the resolve to have thoughts of goodwill, you know, something like that's establishing an intention that then leads to wholesome acts of body, speech, and mind.
I should say one more. Mm-hmm. When Ajahn Chah or others have used the expression of minds no longer moving forward, moving backward, nor standing still, which is a kind of kicker in there. With volition, that part is confusing me, neither standing still, but I would think that when the mind is standing still, then volition, you know, you're seeing volition very clearly at that point, and like stillness seems like it's almost like, yeah, that's good, that's great. But then there's this not standing still, which is a bit of a
right, because there's not a because there isn't a self formulating around the creation of it, and it's free from that. It's also how sometimes Ajahn Chah uses it, was like above cause, beyond effect, above happiness, beyond suffering, above. So that using that, it's a whole other ballgame.